Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
You can text the show 53106 at a cost of 30 cent. You can email aliveandkicking at newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire's Lair. Coming up this morning, should you have a full health MOT at the start of a new year? I'm going to be joined by Dr. Eleanor Galvin. Michelle Maroney of the Cliffs of Moher Retreats on how she's dedicated her life to wellness, and she's here to talk about her new book, The Life Audit. And Mindy O'Brien from Voice on what you can do to make a difference to climate change. So what kind of health and Wellness Week did I have? Well, I've just finished reading Vicky Phelan's book this week. I have spoken on the show many times of my admiration for her. And when you read her story, starting from her childhood, she has been through a lot in life. And it just goes that way for some people, doesn't it? And she's just got one strong spirit. And she gives great account in the book of the women that she met in the same situation as her in the cervical check scandal. And I know there are a lot out there who say there may always be errors in a screening process and we shouldn't lose faith in the system altogether. And I agree, we still need people to go and get screened. I agree with that part of it. But when you read in black and white the details of funerals of otherwise healthy young women who were wives, partners, daughters, mothers, you realise that they're not just facts and figures and stats. They're real people. And when they die, that death ripples out to other lives. I just think she describes it very well. And she's very much involved in anybody's life that she really worked with. And it's a book I enjoyed reading. It did make me count my blessings of my health and wonder every twinge I got, was I unwell? I think that can happen when you're reading a health related book. But yeah, she is some woman. And I listened to Caroline Foran's podcast, which I enjoy. It's called Owning It. And I listened to her interview recently with Brezzy about his anxiety journey, if you'll let me use the term journey without totally cringing, I am. But I do think that both Caroline and Brezzy are excellent communicators on the topic of mental health. And Brezzy talks in it about the language that we use around mental health. And that's really interesting, everything he has to say there. Because I do also love how he's happy to talk about his own experience. He's happy to give examples. No problem. He's very open about it. But he wants to move the conversation on from the fact that it's happening, that it's here. And he wants to give things that we could actually do about it at government level, at school level, all levels, to move the conversation on and things that could actually make a difference. But it was Caroline who said something that really grabbed me about the area of wellness. And she said, and I'm going to paraphrase her words, but still give the intention, that wellness used to be something that came about to talk about how we can improve our lives, and self-care and all that was supposed to be something very positive. But in many ways, it's become something that we berate ourselves over. So if we aren't meditating, if we aren't drinking green juices, if we aren't doing yoga 24/7, then we turn it on ourselves and it can become kind of a negative thing. So I thought that was a really good point, that just if you're not engaging in wellness, it should never be a failure in any way, that it should only ever be a positive thing. Because if it is something you're berating yourself over, it goes completely against the intention. You can text the show 53106 at a cost of 30 cent, or you can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, watching the fires rage in Australia and watching government leaders worldwide consistently failing to meet emission targets, one of the massive impacts on well-being, I think, in recent times has been the stress that the state of our planet brings about. And at times, I feel the helplessness that you feel to actually be able to make a difference. So I've invited Mindy O'Brien from Voice, the Irish Concern for the Environment, into the studio to discuss the topic. You're very welcome, Mindy.
Thanks a million, Claire. Good morning.
We spoke before Christmas, so I was covering for Ciara Kelly about Conscious Christmas and things that you can do to make your Christmas a little greener. And we are very conscious now, I think, of wanting to make a difference. We're definitely a woke generation. We're very aware of what's going on. But can our small changes really make a difference?
Someone said to me, it's great when you think about a hummingbird that brings just a little bit of water each time. You know, just that little bit does make a difference over time. And I don't think what I do will change the whole environment. But I think if everyone had that mentality, nothing would get done. So I think we all have our role to play to reduce carbon emissions, to combat climate change. But not only do we have our own individual actions, but we also have to look at systematic change, systems change. So we need that, you know, should come up at the elections. We need to put in place politicians who are brave, who will take the tough decisions that we need to do to decarbonize our society. So we do our own thing, but also we need to put in place those people who will make those big changes.
I wonder what you should actually say then. If you're going to get a representative knocking on your door, what do you say? What are we looking for? Because I think in recent years, the Green Party have grown in strength. And I think that was a way for Irish people to say, we care about the environment and we want change. And I don't really feel like that change came. Why do we still have single-use plastics? Why do we not have enough places for people to charge electric cars? Why didn't it actually get over the line in the end?
Because I kind of look at this as kind of leading up to the Leaving Cert. You know how you know you should study a little bit every day and leading up to it. And then all of a sudden you're 2 weeks out and you go, oh my God, and you just have to really grind and try to get your studies done. We have known this for years. And you know, COP21 at Paris said we need to reduce our emissions 2% each year. And we just haven't met that. We've been the climate laggard. We don't want to make the tough decisions because it's hard to ask people to give up things. It's hard to make changes. And, you know, should I invest in healthcare? Should I invest in education, transport, build that new road, which is very popular with your constituents? Or should we invest in decarbonizing society? So I think we kept saying, we'll put that off to later. We'll put that off to later. And now we're in crunch time. We're 2 weeks from the Leaving Cert. We need to really start reducing our emissions. And the government is still saying, let's reduce it by 2%. We need to reduce it by 8% per year because we've left it for so long. We really have to make changes. So I think politicians have not been brave enough to tell the honest truth. We are on a knife edge and we really need to make those changes.
So what do you say when somebody knocks on the door from a political party? What do you ask them if you're coming from climate change action point of view?
And the Green climate issues are not just one party. It's not just the Green Party. It should be a whole, everybody should be talking about this. Every political party should be talking about these issues. I think, how are they going to decarbonize our electricity grid? You know, they keep talking about wind, but there's solar, there are other aspects. There's, you know, heat pumps. How to encourage, incentivize individuals to retrofit their houses, make them, we have a very old housing stock. You know, should we need to insulate, we need to put in solar panels. The grants there are really not effective. It's only for those people who could afford it. We need to put more money into public transport, bike lanes. Yes, you can put more charging points in, but electric cars are really expensive and it's only going to be the top, you know, echelon of people who can afford them. So yes, you should put those in, but we should really invest in public transportation.
Because I saw a comment on Twitter only this morning and it was talking about if we got rid of hybrid cars and fuel cars altogether and everybody was driving an electric car, Ireland still wouldn't make a dint in the massive transport that goes on worldwide. I know you go back to the hummingbird again, but that feeling of sort of helplessness, that it's too little, too late, or it's not really going to impact, is really hard to manage. How do you reconcile with that?
It's hard. I wake up some mornings in despair myself. You know, it's, but we can lead the way. You know, government always says, oh, yes, we're the best little country in the world. And we can be, you know, the rising stars. Denmark has really made incredible steps forward and they're showing the way of doing it. And if we can show it can be done.
What changes have they made in Denmark?
They've gone really into cycling and public transportation, decarbonizing that. I don't know the full implications, but I know they want to go net carbon zero, you know, by 2030. In the U.S., they have shown that the whole solar industry has become a huge employment boon for some states. And I think a lot of people look at the environment as contrary to the economy. And it's not. You know, you keep jobs local, you invest in installing solar panels, insulating homes, you know, just retrofitting. And that could be local jobs as well. Also, we need to look at biodiversity loss. The bogs are in desperate state. We need to re-wet them. not only can this climate change affect biodiversity and habitat, but also that can be a soft solution to climate change. So if we have flooding, and we're gonna, they absorb it. So we have to look at not only can we reduce our carbon emissions, but we have to become more resilient in how to deal with the effects of climate change.
Is there a bit of a resistance to change? I know on the one hand, there's a lot of people who want to make a difference and who are not buying cling film anymore. And there's that whole generation. But then there are a lot of people, and I can understand it to a certain extent, who have the not in my backyard mentality when it comes to things like wind farms, when it comes to changing the way we farm. And even looking at the farmers protesting now, I can completely understand this is their livelihood. And I saw some of them speaking on the news and they're saying we're not even having our costs met. I mean, who is expected to work 24/7 the way they do and not be making any money out of it? So you can see all sides. And yet there has to be a massive shift in change.
We need a massive shift. I mean, with the farmers, we definitely need to reduce the herd. We have 8 million cows, more cows than or beef or cattle or bovine creatures than we have people in this country. But we need to have a just transition. They need to have a fair price for their product. I agree with them on that. I forgot the rest of your question. I'm sorry.
But do you think, is it too simplistic to think that the government can assist changes to not just farmers, but to other industries? Like if you have a company that is making single-use plastic, can they be given grants to help them change to compostable packaging?
Although compostable is not the answer either, still single use. But, you know, so there is room for that. I think, you know, you could do grants, but also these are businesses. I mean, I think there should be, in Scotland, they have Zero Waste Scotland, where they have a grant system to put a lot of money towards new innovative businesses, which I think is important to embrace the circular economy, to make sure that you keep products in the system all the time rather than the extract, use, and dispose. So I think you do need a more support and incentives for those. But also I think we need regulations and new rules for businesses that right now they're externalizing a lot of their costs onto the environment. It's hard to quantify damage to an environment. It's hard to say this costs this much when you do a cost-benefit analysis. So I think we need to put more of the onus back on, you know, the supermarkets, the big retail shops, people who are putting a lot of packaging on the marketplace, people who are putting a lot of emissions into the atmosphere. They need to be paying more through a carbon tax, through levies and packaging. They need to be paying more and ring-fence that money to help update our existing infrastructure in this country.
Yeah, sometimes when you look from the outside in, I mean, it's not simple, but it's doable and you just don't understand why it's not happening. How much of an impact does protesting have? So if you hear Extinction Rebellion are meeting, is that something you should get on board with? Or, I mean, not even just, I picked one organisation, which I shouldn't have, but any climate change protesting, should you get involved?
I think you need to get involved, but there's a fine line that if you start disrupting traffic, if you you turn people off as well. So if you're sitting in the middle of an intersection and people can't get home, they will turn negative, I think. But I think positive objections and strikes, I think, are very effective. I think we met with the Taoiseach, and I think that one of the reasons why we met with them was because of the student protests. And I think they should continue to do that.
It opens a door.
It opens the door for dialogue. And I think it's essential. And I think any politician that knocks on your door, you ask them, what are they doing to decarbonize this country? What are they doing to incentivize people to go to cleaner energy? And as every politician that comes through, we will be developing some easy questions on our website, but also the environmental pillar will be pulling together questions to ask at doors when people come knocking.
So when you met with the Taoiseach, what kind of vibe did you get off him about where climate change is on the list of priorities? I know there's a fairly big list, as you say, when it comes to healthcare and all the other things that are going on in the country. But where did you think climate change was?
I think they recognize it's a huge issue. And they say, yes, we're going to be doing something on this. I guess yesterday they just released their climate action plan. But they stood fast with the 2% reduction. And that's just not enough because we put it off for so long. We have to ramp up our emissions reductions and we have to get up to 8%. So I think they were stuck in that. They also haven't committed to keep the fuel in the ground. And, you know, and granting new licenses for oil extraction or fracking offshore. There's also a new natural gas depot that might be going up, LNG gas plant in Shannon that would import frack gas from the U.S. And that seems to be going forward. We need to stop. We need to encourage keeping gas and fuel in the ground as much as possible and focus on renewables.
But still, your message goes back to the hummingbird, which I love because it's quite a positive, pretty image, yeah, which we need.
Yeah.
Keep up with the small changes and don't lose hope.
Yeah, I think so. When you go, you know, I work, as you know, primarily in waste prevention and the circular economy. So when you go shopping, shop loose, you know, avoid packaging where possible. But also when you buy things that you know you're going to use over and over again. Share, do you need a bike? Can you lease it? Can you borrow it? You know, you don't need to consume everything. Go move away from fast fashion. There was an article in the Irish Times about a woman who went without buying new clothes for a year. It's really quite fun. And I'm doing that myself. But I think the main thing is to press the politicians and to move for systematic change. We need to make it easier for people to do it. Like supermarkets, you shouldn't have to go all over the place to get your package-free stuff. It should be easy. It should be mainstream.
Yeah, so keep going. And keep you going. Keep going too, Mindy.
I do. Oh. I do, Claire. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mindy O'Brien there from Voice. Now, coming up after the break, we're going to be talking to Michelle Maroney about her new book, The Life Audit.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
So Michelle Maroney has been a wellness expert her whole adult life. She is a senior wellness and yoga facilitator. And back in 2012, Michelle opened the Cliffs of Moher Retreat in County Clare. And that's something I have on my hit list for 2020. So I was delighted to get her book, The Life Audit, in to the station. I have begun filling it in and the lady herself joins me in studio now. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about you and how you found your way to health and wellness as a way to not only live your life, but earn your living.
Definitely was mental health that keeps me on the journey. And I know when I'm out of balance because I feel it in the thoughts in my mind. And I'm somebody who, when I'm out of balance, I'm prone to anxiety, thoughts, you know, running at 1,000 miles an hour. And then that does affect everything else. And I know for everyone, being out of balance might present differently. That's how it presents for me. And I do really enjoy the physical benefits I get from staying fit and healthy and getting outside into nature. It's definitely how I feel about myself. That's what's kept me doing it.
And I mean, it says here on the back of the book that you have worked in health and wellness most of your adult life. So, I mean, did you finish your Leaving Cert and dive straight in? Or?
Well, I went after college. I studied music and art and I moved to Hong Kong to become an English teacher. Travel was my first love. And I'd heard that, you know, I could make some good money teaching English over in either Japan or Hong Kong. So I made my way out there in 99. And it was over there that I learned about healthy eating. Chinese people have a really good attitude towards food. And there was also a lot of pollution in the air. And then when I wasn't in control of that, I started to look at what I was in control of. I also found yoga when I was living out in Hong Kong. And that journey led me around different places in Asia. I spent 6 months at a healing center in Thailand studying yoga and meditation intently. And after that, I was working as a scuba diving instructor. So this is all BC, before children.
Yes, quite a CV.
Yeah, I know. It's actually not on my CV now, but this is part of my journey. And I traveled to India and traveled all around. I started teaching yoga and then that led me to set up my first business in 2005 with my husband, Yoga Traveller. And it was really during those years of Yoga Traveller, teaching yoga twice a day. And the morning practice is sort of what people might know as a yoga class might look like a yoga class from the outside, more kind of stretching, working on strength and flexibility. But it was the evening classes that complement the morning that works on the nervous system, the slower, restorative, restful, deep breathing classes that I started to observe how profound the shift was for people. And that just opened up another whole side to what I recognized was necessary for wellness, which is balancing the nervous system. And so the pieces just came together: diet, connecting to nature, taking time out, prioritizing health and wellness, balancing the nervous system, and just really grown from there.
And I'm not saying there isn't stress in your life. You run your own business. You're your own boss. Yeah. You have three boys. Yeah. So, you know, you've got to do all the other stuff that people do. I presume you've bills, mortgage, all
Absolutely.
That stuff. But I often think it with myself. I'm freelance. I do work that I love. I'm able to take time to do exercise classes, to try yoga classes. Even this job facilitates meeting people like you. And I often think of people who end up in the rat race, who are sitting in traffic for 2 hours in the morning in their commute, same on the way home, are sitting at a desk all day, come home, are picking up kids from creche. I think there's a lot of people who are finding it difficult to find time to ask the big questions or take time to prioritise their health and wellness.
Well, exactly. And in my training as a coach, they really talked a lot about the idea that the education model isn't enough to be told to do something that we know, we already know. I've used the example before, but, you know, pictures on the cigarette boxes don't necessarily stop people from going in and buying them. So we know, we often know what it is we need. It's that gap between knowing and doing. And that was the idea behind the book, that it was using coaching tools to help to bridge that, you know, where we want to be and actually getting there. And so there are inspirations and tips and tools, but there's also a format or a structure around it to break things down. So there's lots of, it's a workbook, places to fill things in. And some of the questions are not easy. Write down 5 beautiful things about you. And I've done that work in classes, and I've done it myself, and I've done it with people, and that's challenging. But that's, if something is challenging, it's telling us something. And the process of starting to unravel and to delve in and investigate a little bit helps to bring things to the surface so we can be aware. And awareness is the first step to making any positive changes.
And if you do anything like that, I've done a couple of retreats like that, and all you keep thinking of is, oh my God, are we going to have to read this out in front of everybody? And what will other people think? Likewise, when you're filling the book in, you keep thinking of somebody finding it and reading it, and you just have to throw all that away and try not to say the things you think will sound cool or are the right things, and just go with whatever it is. That's hard.
I wrote about that too, actually, in there, you know, about journal writing, you know, not to write it for even your future self to read it or for someone else. And, you know, some people might find that they don't, you know, they might burn it after they finish writing it, say, in a journal. But it is a process. And the more we do it, we get to observe what's coming out. And, you know, there's a wisdom there that we'll recognize, oh, that's what I should be writing. And then as we keep going with the process, the truth starts coming out.
Because I often think why I've had a number of books like this, a number of wonderful books that I have ended up just leaving on the shelf. I have a brilliant book, The Gratitude Attitude Journal, and all you have to do is write things you're grateful for. 3, it sets it up every day, and I start, I feel great, and then all of a sudden I find it under the bed 6 months later. And I often wonder why we fight against doing something like this when we know it's going to be good for us. And I think it comes down to, I always love the quote, I'm probably going to get it wrong, you might be able to correct me, is it Marianne Williamson? And she says, we're not afraid of what we can't do. And I'm paraphrasing. Yeah. We're afraid that
it's
more powerful.
That frightens us. Yeah.
Because if you write down what you want to do in 2020, and I haven't managed to do that yet, we're more afraid that these things will happen and we won't be able for them, as opposed to we'll look at this at the end of the year and they won't have happened.
Yes.
It's really interesting, isn't
it? Even before Marianne Williamson, there's a quote in there, it's Michelangelo, and he said, you know, it's setting our goals. The problem with setting our goals not high enough is that we might meet them, you know?
Yeah.
And then what?
Now, I loved your quote by Einstein. He says, life is like riding a bicycle. To keep your balance, you have to keep moving. And I think that is so powerful, because we kind of forget, we get stuck, we get bored, we get caught up in all the things I was saying about life, but we forget we do need to keep ourselves moving. You can't stay where you are, you've got to keep going.
That's it. All life is, it's growth or death, isn't it? It's just everything is in a state of growth or in a state of decay. That's how nature is and how we are. The Chinese, the Taoists spoke about that a lot. So yes, moving. And it's such a wonderful thing to invest a little bit of time into knowing what our core values are. What do I think is important? And maybe there are 15 of them, but maybe there are 3 that are really stand out for me. Maybe honesty is the one. And so I think part of the process, especially in the first half of the book, is helping to get to know ourselves a little bit more and know what works, what, you know, what we enjoy, what do we want.
Tell me a bit about the Cliffs of Moher retreat. As I say, it's definitely on my hit list for 2020. What a gorgeous part of the world. How did all that come about?
I sometimes think that it happened to us as well. As you know, Michael, my husband, and I, we had set Yoga Traveller up. And then when we moved back to Ireland, we relocated here. We moved to the West in 2008, I think. And we recognised it would be a great location for our yoga holidays. So that's why we set them up. We opened the Cliffs of Moher retreat. And the day we saw it, it was just a crossroads. You know, it was like, this is big.
Yeah.
And we both had the same feeling, which we shared that evening, that it was bigger than us. It was really lovely that both individually had that same feeling. And it was then that I knew this was meant to be. It was part of our journey and it would be part of many other people's journeys.
So was the space already there as so part of their visitor centre?
No. So we're just, the cliffs go along about a 9 or 12 kilometre stretch. Visitor centre is in the middle and we're towards the southern end of the cliffs.
Okay.
And we bought a large property, 5 houses off the bank. We were self-employed. It was during the recession. And it was, the bank had taken back the property and we bought it with all we could have afforded at the time. And we were also supported by LEADER, which is works on rural development, local employment. And we got a huge grant to build the studio. So we designed this stunning state-of-the-art studio with a big wall of glass, 10 metres wide and 3 metres high, looking out to the sea.
Is it in some way record-breaking in Ireland?
I think it was.
The floor-to-ceiling. I've heard this bandied around a little bit.
It's a pretty impressive window. You have to see it when you come. And it's just grown. We've got an incredible team of people working there. From the organic garden, the food artists, as they are, and anyone who's been will tell you. If you look at our TripAdvisor reviews, you know, everyone talks about how beautiful the accommodation is, how great the classes were, and how fabulous the food was. And the setting is, of course, beautiful. And it's sort of a, you know, it's comfortable, beautiful accommodation, art on the walls, and fires are lit. And yeah, it's a real treat.
Because if you are stuck on the hamster wheel of anything in life, I think it's really nice to retreat from all of that and just take some time away.
Yeah.
Even if you're not taking half an hour to fill in a book or journal or whatever it is, this is a full weekend where you can completely reset.
We do loads of different types of retreats that are different lengths. We hear regularly that people say that on the weekends they get 3 months, you know, that they'll still be feeling the effects of the weekend. And people don't bring their phones. It's very interesting. We don't have any rules. We're a vegetarian, we're a dry facility, but we don't have, there's no signs up saying, please don't bring your phone. And people don't. They just leave it. And we're going years now and it's just, people are not on their phones when they're there. It's amazing to watch. Everyone knows instinctually this is a great opportunity to leave it in the room. And just going for walks in nature. I really think connecting into nature is something not to be overlooked. It's simple, but just getting out and feeling the sea breeze. And of course, get everyone, as many of the guests as I can, to come for a swim with me in the sea, no matter what time of year. And people feel really good at the end of it. You know, it's going away. There's fun. We have a wellness area with hot tubs and saunas, plural, lovely relaxation areas. And so there is that sort of side of it that's lovely and decadent. But people go home and they just feel like they've been reset.
And what do you hope people get from the book?
I would really like that the book would help people to empower them to look inside. And yes, there's great teachers out there. There's lots of information and wisdom, but it can feel confusing because there's so many opinions and ways to go. But we are our own greatest teacher too. If we take the time to focus with ourselves, we realize that we know everything that we need to know. We have everything we need. Trust ourselves. And I would like that the book would empower people to, you know, just take the journey. If they are feeling stuck, you know, if they're not feeling that they're moving forward in certain areas, that the book will help them to figure out what they want, what the reader wants.
Good. Well, it's called The Life Audit. It's available in bookshops now. A workbook for a healthier, happier you. Michelle Moroney, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
I must say I highly recommend the book. I have actually been enjoying it and I usually hate anything like that. But if you're into writing your goals, setting a few intentions and look, as she said, getting to know yourself, what can be more fun than that? Do check out the book, The Life Audit. Coming up after the break, we're going to be discussing the health MOT you should give yourself at the start of a new year with Dr. Eleanor Galvin.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
You can text the show 53106, it'll cost you 30 cents, or you can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, Dr. Eleanor Galvin joins me in studio now. Hello there.
Hi, Claire. Good morning.
You had one of your busiest winters so far with sickness. I mean, there wasn't a house in the country that didn't have some kind of virus.
No, it's been absolutely appalling. And you can see it in the news with the amount of people around trolleys, and also, sadly, the amount of flu deaths that have been over this winter has been higher than other years. And the amount of people presenting to hospital with flu.
So why? Is this a different strain or what's going on, do you think?
We're not sure entirely what's going on, but we do know that flu season kicked off too early this year. It kicked off much earlier than we would expect. We also hope that everyone will get a flu vaccine, but that doesn't happen. Even in hospitals, that doesn't happen, that everyone will get a flu vaccine. It's a voluntary thing to get done. And people's lives are busy. They walk past surgeries and pharmacies. They don't get their flu vaccine. And then they end up in bed for a week thinking they're going to die.
And then not only that, but then they're infecting others that they come into contact with. And then
Absolutely.
It just keeps going on and on and on.
You're even infective before you start your symptoms with the flu. So, you know, everything you touch, flu can sit on, everything you sneeze on. And so before people even know they have the flu, they're inside and work. Somebody says, God, you don't look good. And then the next week, half the office says, God, we don't feel well. And people then are inclined to try and struggle into work for a little too long and then not stay at home for long enough to recuperate.
So your message is still, if you haven't got the flu vaccine,
get it.
Even if you've never had the flu in your life.
Well, if you've never had the flu because you've been lucky. If you get the flu vaccine, at least the chance of you getting the flu are hugely reduced. Anyone who's had the flu because they haven't been vaccinated, oh, they turn up the next year and they get the flu vaccine. It's a really rotten dose.
And are people educated enough, do you think, to know the difference between a bacterial infection and a virus? I mean, are you still having people come into your surgery with a virus and there's not really anything you can do for them?
Yeah, I think people are much more educated about what can and can't be done for them. Do you think there's probably merit when a flu is going on for a while to go to a GP and see that you don't have a bacterial infection on top of it? Because sometimes you just pick up everything. And then when you're at such a low ebb. But I do think that people know that the really mad high temperatures, the kind of coughing up clear phlegm or the runny clear nose, that's viral. Whereas the kind of green thick phlegm, the not so high temperatures, that's bacterial. And people generally know the difference between a flu and a cold. And there is no problem turning up and being told, no, you need to take Panadol, you need to drink lots of water, you need to take to the bed. Bearing in mind that you're probably infective while you come and take that journey to come and see us. And a bacterial infection is quite different. And we can tell the difference in a surgery. And it's to weed out the people who need the antibiotics and then not to give them to the people who don't.
And with antibiotics, are we growing too dependent on them, do you think?
Yeah, and we have kind of scoring systems to decide whether or not you deserve an antibiotic or not. So like it takes into account things like symptoms, are your glands up, do you have a temperature, all those sort of things. And then once you kind of tip to a certain point, you should have an antibiotic. The most important thing is that you finish your course, because the bug is what learns about antibiotic resistance and it goes on to somebody else. So if you get an antibiotic, you take it correctly and you finish your course. And if your bug is dead, it doesn't become resistant. It can't go off somewhere else and infect someone else and then have that knowledge of the antibiotic. So it's if you do get them, to take them correctly and to take them for the full course, not I feel better 3 days in and then I'm gonna throw them out.
Okay, so whatever it says in the bottle,
yeah,
do that. And after the antibiotic, do you think it's essential that we get back into probiotics or prebiotics or do something to help our system? Has all the good gone with the bad or is that just
I'm not entirely convinced about that.
Right.
I do think there is a lot of push about probiotics and all that. Why not have a natural yogurt? You know, why not eat something like that? Why a natural fermented food, but not to be taking more tablets, which we really, they're not entirely scientific, in my view, to be taking probiotics other than ones that come in a yogurt that might give you some benefit as well as a little bit of calcium and are a more natural thing to do.
Yeah, just mind yourself a little bit, eat well.
Yeah, eat well. I think that buying probiotics, which possibly cost more than the antibiotic, is probably not a great use of resources.
Fair enough. And you say we're not out of the woods yet. So even though we kind of nearly feel like we're coming out of winter because Christmas is over, that's not really true.
No, flu season runs right till April. So if you haven't got a vaccine yet, you still should get one. So we've been seeing influenza type A. That's what kind of kicked off a few weeks before Christmas. Huge amounts of people on trolleys, people dying. People having minor strokes and heart attacks as complications of having flu, not to mind pneumonias. And now they're starting to see flu type B coming, because that has been the prevalent one in Northern America. And that is now starting to emerge here in Ireland. So a whole new, we're about to have the second wave. So that is also covered in this year's flu vaccine. So if you haven't been hit by the first wave, don't be guaranteeing you're not going to hit by the second wave and have the vaccine.
And things like antibacterial hand wash or any of that, does any of that make a difference?
They say that alcohol hand washes don't really work for the flu vaccine, for the flu virus, which is strange, but that hand washing does, ordinary hand washing. If you're going to sneeze or cough, do it into a tissue or into the crook of your arm. Don't do it around your office, around the door handle as you go out of the office. So that's the kind of ways in which you would help to stop it spreading.
And isn't it true, or is it true, to wash your hands properly, you should be standing there for the time it takes to sing the full verse of Happy Birthday, because we just kind of show the water. And I even watch my own kids pump the soap and then just let that run off their hands down the sink. I mean, that is not washing.
Have a good rub in between your fingers, around your nails, and
spend
over
some
your
time.
Absolutely.
You don't have to fully scrub up.
No, and life gets so fast that people all do these things way too fast. Brush their teeth too fast, wash their hands too fast. But sometimes it's just to take the time and maybe breathe out for a second.
I know, we're just so busy, aren't we? It's hilarious, this busy mentality. And what time should we take then at the start of a new year looking ahead to our health? Should we have a full MOT? Who do you recommend should have their bloods done, for example, or go to see a GP just to say, how are things?
I think it's really valuable to get your bloods done. I think sometimes it opens up conversations about your health and your lifestyle. I think everybody should know what their blood pressure is. I think everybody should know what their cholesterol is. I think everyone should know whether or not they're pre-diabetic, are diabetic at times. People should know if their liver function is off, and perhaps we need to have the conversation about the drinking the bottle of wine every night. All those sort of things can come about from having your bloods done. So I do think having your bloods done is a smart thing to do. So also people can have family histories of strange things. So they might say, oh goodness, my dad had a stent and every one of my uncles has had a heart attack. Well now, what's your cholesterol? What's your blood pressure? Do you know those things? How are you going to make sure you don't go down that road? So those are kind of sensible conversations and investigations to get done for anybody of any age. Now, I'm not saying bring your 12-year-old in for bloods, but I'm saying from kind of 30 onwards, is your thyroid underactive? Are you anemic? Is this why you are feeling exhausted and going home for a lie down after work? You know, because some of those behaviours aren't normal.
Yeah. And I mean, it is just a checkup, isn't it? And it's just a look under the bonnet to see is everything running. I mean, you're not looking for anything sinister, but it's good to know and be aware of your own health.
And most things caught early can be helped faster. So before you become diabetic, you're probably pre-diabetic, and that's the time to talk to somebody about their diet and lifestyle. And before you get into liver failure from drink, that's the time to tell you to stop drinking 2 bottles of wine a night. So those conversations ought to be had.
And what about then markers to look out for? What are indicators of poor health?
I suppose indicators of nutrition would be things like vitamin B12, which can also sometimes lead to the conversation that somebody might be celiac, low iron. Some women kind of just accept that their periods are horrendously heavy every month and they go around in a permanent state of exhaustion. Those sort of things would be indicators maybe of poor health, poor nutrition, protein levels in your blood. All those sort of things can be talked about after somebody has a blood test. People's kidney function, quite often, how do you know your kidneys are working well? Most of them are, but there's always going to be a few people who have an issue. A blood test is a pretty cheap thing to get done, and it will tell you an awful lot.
And what about how we feel then? Because like you say, some people just go around taking for granted that they feel lethargic all the time, or that they get headaches, or that they get cramps, or whatever it is. Yeah. It just becomes their new normal and they just get on with it or mask it with painkillers. So how do you keep a monitor of how you're feeling yourself, or what would be the markers you'd look out for?
Well, I suppose you should be sleeping normally. You should be able to get to sleep. You should sleep at night. You should be able to do all the things you ought to be doing without feeling you need a nap or that life is terribly, terribly exhausting. And if you have bloods done and your life is exhausting and there's nothing wrong with you, then you need to look at your lifestyle, because then it's not sustainable.
What if there's three kids bouncing around the house? That's a good indicator, isn't it? I mean, you are going to feel like you want a nap, but it's not allowed.
Well, it's probably not possible either, isn't it? I suppose if you have three kids bouncing around the house and you're permanently exhausted, you'd be sure your thyroid is fine, your iron is fine. And then you'd say to yourself, maybe I'm a good enough mammy if I bring them to the park once a day, I read them a story once a day, and that you don't need to be permanently up in their face mammying them the whole time. Maybe you need to have a bit of self-care, that maybe you need to say, look, you mind my three kids for 30 minutes. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to do something for myself for a bit of headspace. Mm. And maybe you'll turn it around that way.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. Like, it's the same thing. You kind of accept a certain new normal, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. We all deserve to feel well, to feel energised. I mean, we don't have to be running marathons every day, but we can still feel well in ourselves.
You shouldn't hit the wall before you decide that you've got to change things. You should be kind of wondering where you're at the moment and saying, maybe I could be a little better. Maybe I could look after myself a little bit better. Maybe I could change my lifestyle a little bit differently. And maybe the start of that conversation would be to get bloods done and to have the conversation about how you are feeling, where you're at and where you'd like to be.
Steve has made a life change. He says, I'm doing dry January and I feel more tired every morning than when I'm drinking.
Steve might have a problem. It's obviously washing out of him. Dry January is a good way of starting a conversation with somebody who drinks too much. And dry January sometimes brings people out who have been drinking too much. And they struggle in dry January, and then perhaps they need a larger conversation of why can you not go a whole month without alcohol? It shouldn't be something you find too hard to do, unless perhaps you are a little dependent.
I think as well, January can be tough because there aren't all the invitations coming through the door. There aren't all the meetups. There isn't the money necessarily while you're waiting to get paid.
Grand month to do it, isn't it?
So you can feel a bit low anyway. I'd say the same maybe to Shawnee. He says, any tips for staying motivated this time of year? I also find my enthusiasm is low.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's back again to looking after yourself, eating well, going to bed at a reasonable hour, doing something that nourishes your mind. Maybe read a nice book you were just talking to. A woman with a book about life auditing. Do something positive. It doesn't need to be expensive nor take a long time. Go out and walk in nature. Do all those sort of normal things, and then say to yourself at the end of the month, I still feel like dreadful. Maybe it is time for me to have a little bit of a checkup. I think that the dry January thing, it's a month where you don't have a lot of invites, as you said. It's a month to try that. And if you are struggling, maybe you need a little bit more help in that area.
We're talking a lot more about the pillars to health, that there's nutrition, that there's nourishing the soul, as you said, and sleep is another major factor.
Yeah.
Are you seeing a lot more of issues with sleep?
I would think that sleep is a symptom of another illness. So quite often people, first of all, have huge expectations that they need to go to bed at 11 o'clock and get 8 hours sleep. Now, we don't need that necessarily. We don't need 8 hours sleep to function. Some people function perfectly well on six. But if you're only getting four and you're not functioning, well, then you do need to look at it. And there generally is a reason that you're not sleeping. It can be that you're too wound up during the day, that you have anxiety, you have depression. It's also sleep apnea. There's a whole load of reasons why people aren't sleeping properly. The real sign of a good night's sleep is that you wake up feeling refreshed. You have to wake up ready for the day. And if that isn't happening, sleep can be being put off by being depressed, that you don't get that quality sleep, or that you wake up really early looking at the ceiling at 4:30 in the morning, or that you find it you can't get off to sleep for hours because you're anxious and your thoughts are running around your head. And those sort of people, they need to go and address it.
Yeah, because it's so important.
Or to try and function without a night's sleep, especially for the woman who's talking with three small children. How do you function without a night's sleep?
Yeah.
You have to get it.
Well, in 2020, I've started leaving my phone downstairs, and
excellent.
I have to say it makes an amazing difference. As always, Dr. Eleanor Galvin, thank you very, very much. And my thanks to my producer, John Fardy. Julia Tireno was on research and Jojo Cardoza was on sound this morning. Have a good Sunday.